As little girls and boys, we look up at the glowing angel that gave us life with love and adoration. But for too many, this is not a happy reality. For many, the woman holding us is a true monster. These are their nightmares. Delve deep as we unravel the turbulent bonds between mother and child. You are listening to Monsters and Mothers with your host, Betty Wild.
What's up, everybody? This is Betty Wild coming to you from Monsters and Mothers. And today's case is Catherine Knight. Is she nuttier than a peanut brittle? We'll find out. I gotta say, part of me likes her. I'm not gonna lie. And I'm not even sure exactly why, but I think I'm gonna pin it down to the fact that she would not let any man do her wrong. She kind of cracks me up when I'm looking at this case and seeing how she carried herself. She's a little bit goofy. So if you get a chance, look her up. It's kind of funny. All right. So today, Miss Knight is on the table. And she's one of those women that made history for being so out there that she literally shocked the world. She grew up in this little town of Aberdeen. And she really shook that town with all the menacing brutality that she did. I mean, they were not prepared for her at all. To look at Catherine, you would see a tall, slender redhead with glasses that looks very plain. And she looks more like somebody who you would find in a library. She's very kind of a calm look on her, very peaceful. Almost want to think of her as an Amish woman. Just to look at her. She looked very innocent is what I'm trying to say. But this woman could flip like a switch and turn into the most raging lunatic you have ever seen. This woman had no medium, no middle ground. And it's also why this woman actually had no friends. She, I think, was close to one of her sisters, but anybody that was around her just stayed clear of her just because she was so on edge all the time. You wouldn't know that this woman had an off switch that was that sensitive. She began her obsession with death when she was just a little girl. And in 2001, Catherine Knight became the first Australian woman to be jailed for the term of her natural life. Coined as the most vicious female killer, she was definitely a thrill killer. A female psychopath is very rare, so let's break down the past of this woman that would land her right where she is today. She grew up in Cattle County by the coal mines in Wales, and the abattoir was a huge, huge place to work at. It was actually her lifelong dream to work there and where her family began. And actually where she was conceived as well. They grew up in abusive families, which led to abusive behavior. And they themselves were abusive because of it. Now, Catherine, again, she didn't have any friends but because of this temper, but she was close to her sister, Joy. She craved her mother's attention, even though she reports that her mother beat her regularly. Literally, Catherine was damaged goods. The household she grew up in, I think it was what really created Catherine. Her mother, Barbara, was always being abused. But Barbara didn't just lie down and take the abuse. She was a wildcat and almost gave as good as she got. Meaning, she didn't just take a beating, she gave one. But Catherine's father was very violent, and he was the type to demand sex and, no matter what, get it. So he quite often would rape her mother, and she reports that a lot of the times it was in front of her and her sister. On top of that, she also says that she was a victim many times of physical abuse and sexual abuse at the hands of family members. So by the age of 3 and 4, Catherine was already forming and shaping into this person. And she knew she wasn't going to be rescued. And she had to fight and survive. At that age, something snapped like a circuit tripping in her brain. She became a very violent child. In school, it was difficult for her to learn. She never did learn to read or write properly, and she was always getting into fights. She mentally disconnected, and she didn't learn love, joy, or empathy. Her classmates saw her turn on her sister one day over a bicycle, and instead of settling it like normal sisters with like name calling or hair pulling, Catherine and her sister stood out there and beat the bloody pulp out of each other. Now, since she had no education and didn't graduate, her one and only dream was to work at the abattoir, which, if you don't know what an abattoir is, it's a slaughterhouse. And this slaughterhouse is like straight out of that horror film, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So it was very odd for this library-looking woman to be obsessed with working at a slaughterhouse. She got to work in the offal room, skinning cattle, and then worked up to the deboning room. Easily, this place slaughtered 600 a day. The best part of the job for Catherine was that she got her own set of knives. And you would have thought that this was a little girl receiving a Barbie on Christmas. These knives meant more to her than anything else in her life from that moment on. There was something disturbing about the way she took pleasure in killing these animals. She took pleasure in watching them suffer, and she would nick their arteries to see the blood squirt out. She was fascinated by death. This is when she began to fantasize about killing, and the abattoir was her killing field. She really got off on it. And the few that would watch her were terrified of her. She instilled in others this fear, and she loved it. Luckily, this is what satisfied her at the time. Then, like most women, what changes in her life? We meet a man. Now there's a new guy in town, and he saunters in. His name is David Keller, and she falls insanely in love over him. She was actually taller than him by like a head. David was her first sexual encounter. And in the 70s, they were all about sex. And the two couldn't get enough of each other. They drank heavily. And then one morning, David wakes up and realizes that, oops, he's proposed to her. And this is where the nightmare would begin for David. On their wedding night, David woke up to Catherine strangling him for not having sex with her 5 times because her mother had reported to her that she had sex 5 times on her wedding night, and so she thought that this was the norm, and David was only able to do it 2. So this really set her off, and she strangled him on their wedding night. David actually wound up dying years later in 2007 of a heart attack, but his sister has vivid memories of his life with Catherine. And she was 18, and so was Catherine, and she thought that they were madly in love in the beginning and thought that they were an odd couple. David's sister went to live with them for a few months, and she did get along with Catherine very well, actually. They were pretty close. But David's mother worried about her and her rapid mood changes. Catherine would be humming 1 second, she says, and the next she could fly into a rage. When Kathy was cranky, she became so strong, like a bull, an animal. She began threatening people with her knives. She could like literally throw her husband across the room. That's how strong she was. By 20, Catherine was pregnant, and her husband, David, would tell people, just when she gets mad, just stay the hell out of her way. And he knew how violent she got. But it didn't stop him from being, well, unfaithful. But being married to someone like her, you could almost understand why he would want that type of an out. It wasn't just once. He had multiple affairs. And the relationship was definitely unhappy. So Miss Catherine got wind of this, and about 6 weeks later, she got on top of him and tried to stab her husband with a beer bottle. And he said to himself that he was done with her craziness, and he left for Queensland with his new girlfriend. But Catherine was far from over or letting David get away. She was furious and would not be abandoned with a child. And this sent her over the clear edge. So there were people that reported actually seeing Catherine walking the streets, pushing her baby carriage, almost as if she's whipping it around and swinging it into the street. And at one point, they actually thought she was going to hurl the baby carriage into the street. And the police were called. She was taken into a psychiatric hospital. And she was treated with antidepressants and stayed there for a few weeks. But still, she was not able to handle David not being in her life. And she walked up to the railroad track. This is after she had been released, obvious. But afterwards, she walks up to the railroad track and places her daughter, her baby daughter, on the tracks and walks away. Now, a store owner that was close by that had been watching her the whole time ran up and grabbed that baby. Catherine, however, walked into a house nearby, into the yard, and grabbed an axe from the back and started swinging it around her head like a maniac. This person was completely out of control. She was taken back to the mental hospital, and then she wound up checking herself out 24 hours later. And then she snapped again and attacked a friend that she had asked to come over and slashed her in the face. She took her friend's family hostage and told them that they were going to take her to David's family. And she had this plan that she would take this family hostage and that they would drive her down there. And her plan was to kill David's mother. She thought that by killing his mom, that she would be able to get his attention that way. And that was the only way to truly hurt a man, was by killing his mom. So she threatened everyone. One of the hostages that she had was a little child, and he managed to get out and call the police. And again, she was taken back to the hospital. Now in Queensland, David's new girlfriend was pregnant, and things weren't working out. And he got wind of what was happening to Catherine and heard that she was in the hospital. So he called his mom up and said, "We have to get her." And then they drove to Aberdeen to pick her up and the baby. At this point, David's mom had only actually met Catherine's mother twice. This would be Catherine's mother, Barbara, that I'm talking about. So seeing her was quite a sight. So when they arrived to pick up the baby, Barbara comes running out of the house, reaches in through the car window, and proceeds to choke David with his mother in the back seat. Now his mom is in the back panicking. And then Kathy comes running behind the mother and whacks her mother on the head, knocks her mother out just to protect David. This family and this whole situation was quite a nightmare. Trying to make a new start in life, they moved and started new jobs. All was finally well in the household. In 76, David threw Catherine a birthday party for her 26th birthday. And for this one moment in her life, Catherine felt like a princess. And she was so well behaved. And she couldn't stop kissing David all night long. And it was the happiest and calmest anyone had seen. Think about it. This woman who had no attention from anybody in her life and fought for everything that she had. Finally, somebody was throwing her a surprise that meant to her how loved she was and adored, something she had never experienced. So she was high on life that night, and everyone around her was finally at peace, and they actually enjoyed her company. And it was just a full-on treat, but it didn't last long. And soon after, she had started behaving really bizarre. She would carry her knives, her prize knives, around everywhere she went, and even going so far as to hanging them above her bed when they slept. And David's sister asked, "Why do you keep knives in the bedroom?" And she said, "I keep them there in case I need them." So, can only imagine what she would need a knife for in the bedroom. On one occasion, David's sister, who was still staying with them, had heard one of the kids crying in the bathroom and couldn't believe what she saw. There was so much screaming. And she took a peek in, and there she saw Catherine holding the baby girl under the hot, scalding water. This baby was just screaming. So the baby is screaming, and she left out of fear of what Catherine would do to her and David if she knew they knew. And his sister ran to her brother David and said, "Please promise me you won't say anything to her tonight, or she will kill us both." I mean, this house was in constant fear of this maniac. By this time, the marriage was in ruins, and David lived in fear of Catherine. But even through that fear, she still managed to convince him to have another child. If no one realized earlier, with her swinging the child around, putting the baby on the track, leaving the baby under hot water, that this woman should not have another child. Yet, there she is, pregnant. Now, on one night, while she was pregnant, David already knew that at any moment she could attack. And one night he had a dart tournament, and he knew he was going to be late, but he really wanted to do this, so he took his chances. And sure enough, when he got home, he was late. And that was the one thing that Catherine couldn't handle. It really got under her skin. What did she do? As soon as David walked through the doors, she met his head with a skillet and literally cracked his head open. He ran to the neighbor's house, and the neighbor is like freaking out. She thought that she split his head open. There was just so much blood. He wound up being in the hospital for a week. Catherine had gone mad with anger. So when David didn't show up home on time, she took all of his things and set them on fire. Like everything this man owned, she threw into the bathtub and set it on fire. I mean, the only thing that he had left to his name, he was wearing. And he didn't even press charges on this woman. She had begged him not to for the sake of their kids, which makes no sense. And he agreed. For no God-foreseen reason, this couple proceeds yet to have another child. Now, by this time, they moved again, got new jobs, and Catherine is staying home more, and David is working as a truck driver. So what's happening to Catherine? This anxiety is building up in her, and she's feeling like her crazy self, and it's starting to bubble. And David wakes up again with Catherine trying to stab him and screaming at him at the top of her lungs. She was screaming at him, "I know you truck drivers have a girl in every town. I know you do." She's screaming like a lunatic. And he, of course, denies it, but secretly he actually had been. And this put so much strain on the relationship that he came home one day and she was gone. And I honestly have to assume for that at least one little second he had to have been relieved that she wasn't in the house. And Catherine went back home to Aberdeen. She wasted no time. She began dating another man named David, who was working at the coal mines. He was an ex-race car driver. He was a burly man, another rough type. Shortly after dating, he moved in with Catherine and her kids. But the honeymoon didn't last again. And David was also prone to coming home late, and she greeted him with a hot iron to his face, then began to swing him around the room by his arm, attempting to cave his face in. Why did all these men stay with Catherine? Well, apparently she was amazing in bed. But one morning, after an argument, David storms out and leaves her. David makes the mistake, though, of leaving his dog, and he comes back to see Catherine nursing his dog. But when he looks closer, he realizes that Catherine slit his dog's throat. This was the one thing that Dave loved, and she stole it from him. He saw her on the ground holding the dog covered in blood. Afterwards, Catherine went to her sister Joy's house and announced that she had killed David, just to see the shock on her face. And she really got a kick out of playing this out, even though she actually hadn't done it. David attempted many times to leave her, and she just wouldn't let him go. She got herself pregnant again by David, and they had a baby daughter. David bought a cottage for them. When the baby was 6 months old, things just never got better, and he managed to escape by telling her he was working on a job in another town and would be gone for a bit, and he never came back. He hid in Newcastle, and the fact that he managed to get away really created this monster in Catherine. And she had told her daughter that her dad was dead. But it wasn't long before she was pregnant by another man, except this time she left him with the kids. She had a child, her first son, actually. And she just had it. That was it. She was like, no man's going to leave me. I'm going to leave. And this man actually kept the kids. So kudos for him. At this point, Catherine had 4 children to 4 men. And the last man was now caring for the kids. Now, this is the time in her life she doesn't have the kids to deal with. And she falls for John Pricey. This is the ultimate man of her dreams. This is the one that where she truly feels like he could be her everything. Now, all her exes claimed at this point that she used to beat them so brutally that during their interviews, they actually broke into tears. So I'm actually scared to even read further on for you what she did to this man she truly loved. Now, John and her were 38 years old, and he was an Australian that also worked in the mines, and he was a really super nice country guy with good manners. Catherine and him started off really well. The kids actually liked their dad's new girlfriend, so John had 2 daughters and a son. They all got on pretty well, and then they didn't think that there was anything really wrong in the relationship, and they didn't realize how dangerous she was. But John's daughter, one of his daughters, remembers driving with Catherine in the car and watching Catherine swerve the car to hit a dog instead of avoid the dog. And she asks, wait, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I don't like dogs. So they knew that something was off about her to try to intentionally hurt a dog. The relationship followed the usual pattern, except this time she couldn't get pregnant. She was getting on in her years that she couldn't use against him, you know, to keep him, which I think is what she was doing with the other guys, was getting herself purposely pregnant. But the violence grew anyway between them. She would stab him and leave scars on his body. Now, at this point in the relationship, she's pushing for marriage, and he told her he was only in it for sex. When he wouldn't listen, she went after his kids. She would tell his daughter that he wasn't their real dad and that their mom had slept with some other man. She's not his. How do you do that to someone that you love and go straight to their kids? I mean, you have to be crazy and out of your mind. I don't know how she's gotten this far with people. At this point, John and Catherine, they don't live together, but Catherine definitely is living in John's house like it's her own. And John is pissed at her, and he's just done with her shit. She, at this point, is thinking that this house is rightfully hers. So she finds his will and sees that he leaves everything to his ex-wife and kids. And this just set her off, and she's just irate right now. And so she goes to John and says, I want $10,000 to leave. And he refuses. He's like, I'm not giving you anything. So she went around videotaping things that he had stolen from his job, like these big, like, I think they're like first aid kits. She winds up getting him fired, and now he's unemployed and stays with her. Little did he know that that would be the fatal mistake that he made. Now all her kids are in school. She has too much time to obsess about death, and she's home stewing, and she's collecting all these artifacts and animal heads and weapons. I mean, the place looks like right out of a massacre, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So you see all of the saws and the axes hanging on the walls and furs and snakes. And I mean, it was just like a horror room. You would never think that this actually belonged to a female. You know, a lot of women, we do like macabre things. I mean, I love stuff like that, but you know, this was like hardcore strange, like a psychopath. So now this is something that she actually gets pleasure out of, because anybody who comes and sees this, it intimidates them. And that's where she truly gets her joy. Now, in 1999, she was desperate to keep John, and he was terrified and tried to get help, and nobody would believe him. He did, though, go to a courthouse, and they told him that he had to wait 3 weeks to get a court order to have a court date with her. But even though he's like showing people his stab wounds, that she tried to stab them, that they had like a massive fight and the police came, things were just out of control, and still nobody was really doing anything about this. So the people at work, because he had gone to his job showing them, look, she stabbed me, I don't know what to do. And they pleaded with him, John, please don't go back to that house. And he said, I have to. If I don't, she'll go after my kids. And all while this is happening, and he's trying to be patient and wait for that court date, Catherine is playing out this fantasy in her head. And she goes out and she buys a black nightie. And then she heads to her kids with a video camera and is filming them as though it's like her last will and testament. And she's saying goodbye to them on the videotape and talking to them as though these are her last words to them. Then she goes home, watches some TV, takes a shower, and puts on her black nightie, and they go to bed. They had sex that night, and that is when she struck. The next day, his boss and kids were worried that they didn't see him show up for work, and they tried calling the house over and over, and nobody answered, and they knew that this was what he was trying to warn them about, and they were so fearful. When the police arrived at the house, they found her on the bed with pill bottles laying about her, and they dragged her out of the house in handcuffs. She walked by the kids and grinned, and John's son fell to his knees in tears. It was incredibly cold and calculated, and she knew exactly what she was doing. She even told her sister weeks before that she was going to kill him and get away with it by pleading insanity. When the detectives arrived, she was taken away in an ambulance. And when they went into the house, it was a horrific massacre. They couldn't believe that any human could commit this offense, let alone a woman. Catherine Knight stabbed John Price 37 times before skinning, beheading, and further mutilating his corpse. She then cooked parts of his body, including his head. She prepared two plates for his children. The plates were arranged of human meat and vegetables, and there was a note beside each one, written very poorly, since she never really learned to read or write. Knight still refused to accept responsibility for her actions. At the sentencing hearing, Knight's lawyer requested that she be excused to avoid hearing some of the facts, but was refused. When Timothy Lyons took the stand and described the skinning and decapitation, Knight became hysterical and had to be sedated. The judge, O'Keefe, pointed out that the nature of the crime and Knight's lack of remorse required a severe penalty. He sentenced her to life imprisonment and ordered that her papers be marked never to be released. This was the first time that this had been imposed on a woman in Australian history. Knight did receive the life sentence without any possibility of parole. Thank you for listening to today's show. I'm Betty Wild, and this is Monsters and Mothers.
Thank you for listening to Monsters and Mothers. Subscribe to hear more chilling accounts of mothers who commit unspeakable horrors.